As the UN celebrates its 70th anniversary, more and more countries and organizations are making a push for its reform, especially in the areas of transparency, accountability, and representation.
Since World War II, the UN Security Council has operated with the same structure of a few powerhouse nations dictating the agenda, promoting their own national interests, and leaving many important regions without representation.
This is the only organization right now that deals with security around the world, and therefore we have to try to operate in a way that creates consensus on the Security Council so those five nations will agree.
In this episode of In Focus, we will explore why reform of the United Nations, and in particular the Security Council, is so important and what's causing its delay. The core principles on which the United Nations were founded were to safeguard human rights, prevent war, improve living standards, promote social and economic progress, and provide a mechanism for upholding international law. Can any of this really be achieved, however, given the current state of the organization and specifically the UN Security Council? Currently, the Security Council has 15 members, with five permanent nations, including the United States, Russia, France, China, and the UK, and 10 temporary members elected by the General Assembly for two-year terms. A no vote from one of the five permanent members kills a resolution, and many reform seekers view this policy as a disproportionate distribution of power. In addition, each of the five permanent members have gone to war or invaded a country without Security Council approval, showing a disregard for the body's authority. As another example, the United States has invoked its veto power frequently over issues concerning Israel and the Palestinian occupied territories. To explore the issue of UN Security Council reform further, we took a short trip to the Upper West Side of Manhattan to meet with Stephen Schlesinger, a prominent author and UN expert. He is currently working on an extended article for the Huffington Post on the issue of Security Council reform. I asked him about his article.
So I just don't think anybody has fully explored the issue between the United States and the UN. I think the most important part of the UN has been the role of the US throughout the years. And I think most countries who are members of the organization realize that. But nobody has really addressed that. What is the power of the United States at the UN? Why does it have that kind of authority? How much impact does it have on UN decisions?
So why do you feel that the Security Council only has five permanent members, which some argue greatly underrepresents the rest of the world?
Well, it does underrepresent much of the world, and I'll get to that in a moment. The reason why those five members have the veto power is that when the organization was formed in 1945, the consequence of the League of Nations, which preceded UN, was that every country in the League had a veto. That meant that a single rogue country could veto any action by the League. It rendered the League ineffective. What the United Nations decided to do was give only five countries the veto on the theory that those five countries would be the most likely ones to contribute military manpower to any venture undertaken by the UN. Now that was accepted with great reluctance in San Francisco in 1945 by smaller countries who very much protested the idea that only five nations should get the veto. But, you know, Russia and the United States threatened that if they did not get that veto, they would walk out of that UN conference.
Facing resistance from the world powers, smaller organizations eventually conceded in the interest of setting up the world organization. But for the past 70 years, the question of reform and reducing the power of veto has been a consistent issue. Do you think that one country should be able to block any resolutions at the Security Council?
The fact of the veto does not seem fair when you think about equity in an organization like the United Nations. The problem we're facing, though, is that in order to change the veto setup, you need the consent of those five countries. And those five countries are unwilling to, at this point, give their consent. And they have the ability to veto, frankly, any effort for reform. So we're in a sort of static situation now. The other part of the veto power, which is problematical for making decisions, is that, of course, those five countries can, if they have their own national interests involved, block action. And we've seen that plenty of times.
So on that note, do you think that the situations that occur with Israel and in the Ukraine right now, do you think that's a good example of what you're...
The United States always vetoes resolutions aimed at Israel. Russia has its own interests. It will not, you know, allow any intervention by the UN in Ukraine. The UN is based on moral authority. It doesn't have troops of its own, but it does have, it kind of expresses the will of the world community. And obviously, a lot of countries disagree wholeheartedly with the US position on Israel. And so the fact that the UN Security Council will not take a position on Israel, and consistently, because of the US veto, never goes beyond a discussion, means that Israel never is addressed as a malefactor by the world community. So when it becomes national interest by these five countries, you will see a situation where the UN is ineffective, can't act, doesn't have any role, and looks weak. So this is the downside of the veto, and one that we all have to kind of accept, because this is the only organization right now that deals with security around the world. And therefore, we have to try to operate in a way that creates consensus on the Security Council so those five nations will agree to undertake missions that they all support and will not veto.
To further investigate the ongoing saga of Security Council reforms, the upcoming election of the Secretary General, and the role of regional organizations in peace and security missions, Stephen paid a visit to Thomas Weiss, the director of the Ralph Bunche Center at the City University of New York. He's a scholar of international relations with special expertise in the politics of the United Nations. We tagged along with him to capture an interesting debate between two scholars focused on UN politics.
And Kofi Annan, when he was Secretary General in 2005, tried to begin a reform process at the United Nations, which would have resulted in a change in the Security Council. And one of the reforms was to spread the veto among more nations. Another reform would have actually limited the veto to only certain kinds of war and peace issues.
That was the 60th anniversary, and it was also, of course, a moment in which the United States was not well viewed after the 2003 war in Iraq and the United Kingdom. So I calculated, and I think that about 95% of diplomatic energy during the lead up to the World Summit was spent on Security Council reform, and absolutely nothing happened. Kofi called it a San Francisco moment. It was anything except a San Francisco moment. And there's been a working group meeting probably every week since that time to discuss proposals that actually go nowhere.
Another proposed change to the council is to admit more permanent members. The candidates are Brazil, Germany, India, and Japan. They comprise the group of G4 nations, mutually supporting one another's bids for permanent seats. The United Kingdom, France, and Russia support G4 membership, but for a variety of different reasons, this proposal is opposed by many other nations.
What is the criteria for adding nations to the Security Council?
Obviously, Pakistan has a few second thoughts about India being a permanent member, Argentina and Mexico about Brazil, and the story goes on and on. So and then the medium powers, the ones that have been the backbone of the UN, the Norwegians, the Swedes, the Canadians, who have always participated not only in peacekeeping, they contribute far more per capita to UN expenses. They're left out of this equation. So the gang of four, the India, Brazil, Germany, and Japan, I think will remain on the outside as long as the two of us are having these conversations.